Another episode of Goodnight Sweetcast, the Goodnight Sweethearts podcast. I'm Philip Sharman and I'm joined as always by Chris Wallace.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. And we're going to talk today about episode 3 of season 2, Just One More Chance, which in itself seems like quite the misnomer because if anyone in the world has got more than one chance left in
Gary.
The bank, that's Gary Sparrow. Playing us in was a lovely rendition of Goodnight Sweethearts.
It was, I liked it.
Recorded by, and this is quite the pseudonym, Knuckles O'Toole.
It's good. That's not his real name though, you say?
That's not his real name, Knuckles O'Toole, ragtime extraordinaire. His real name, still recording today under this name, even though that version we heard was from the 1950s, his real name, Dick Hyman.
Oh, shut up. It's not.
That's his real name, Dick Hyman.
Well, I can understand why he'd want to change it then. You can't be a performing artist called Dick Hyman.
You'd have thought not, but apparently you can, and you can have a long and illustrious career.
You couldn't even say, oh, well, I'm going to have to be Richard Hyman.
His chosen Dick.
a lot of errors he's made.
Well done, Dick Hyman. Dick Hyman of New York City. The genres, according to Wikipedia, the genres that Dick Hyman records under are swing, stride piano, lounge music, and spy music.
Ooh.
Spy music.
Yeah, like tense investigations.
Hmm. Dick Hyman, spy musician. That's what his business card says? I'd imagine. Do musicians have business cards?
Yeah, of course they do.
Okay.
I've seen one before, and it's a card that's got a picture of a microphone on it, and you give it to producers, big-time producers you meet at bars, and say, check me out, I'm Knuckles.
The name's O'Toole, Knuckles O'Toole.
And I say, you'll be a star.
But you can call me Dick Hyman.
Yeah.
We left off last week where Gary had been a naughty boy.
Yes, he was going to do some drunk driving.
He was, but he was stopped. His collar was felt.
By PC Deadman of the future, now past.
PC Deadman of the future past.
Yeah.
Felt his collar. He was arrested for drink driving or drunk in charge of a vehicle. And we rejoin episode 3. With Gary about to stand trial.
He's got his best suit on.
It's a lovely suit, isn't it?
It's very big.
Uncomfortably big.
That was. I haven't really talked about this before. Was that a thing?
I think when you've got the frame of Nicholas Lyndhurst,
oh, yeah.
You're not exactly built for a suit anyway.
It's not his fault.
But it wasn't a very typical 90s suit that he was wearing. It was double-breasted, which wasn't very 90s. So it was a weird timeless thing, but it wasn't flattering.
No. I don't feel like the double-breasted suit is fit for a Gary. I think he should have known that. But then he doesn't care, does he? He doesn't, when he checks himself out on shop mirrors, so he's not exactly that careful when he purchases.
It got a very 90s tie on.
Yeah.
White shirt.
It was red and it had colours on it and shapes.
As was the fashion of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's preparing himself to stand trial. Yvonne's not pleased with him. When is she ever? What does he have to do to make her pleased with him?
She's not happy when he brings home rubbish dinners. She's not happy when he gets done for drink driving. When will she be happy?
Not happy when he gets arrested in Latvia. God, this woman, she just cannot be pleased.
No.
She's very condemning of his actions, and so she should be, because he doesn't seem particularly sorry. He's worried at this stage.
Yeah.
But he kind of understands that, yeah, he's gonna go down. Mm.
This is not his forte, but this is the thing he does the most, getting himself out of scrapes. And in the past, he has been relatively successful. So Ron recognises this and tries to perk him up. Well, he doesn't perk him up at first. At first, he tells him he's going on death row.
Ron finds the whole thing hilarious.
Mm. As you would. As I would. I'd love it if someone I knew... No, I wouldn't love it if someone I knew got done for drink driving. That would be horrible. Huh.
But you'd want them to
see the funny side?
Own their predicament, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And maybe have learnt from it and feel like there was some moral lesson to be taken from it.
Mm.
That's not what we get here particularly. Ron's enjoying himself, making out that he's going to help Gary select his last meal.
Kidneys.
What would your last meal be?
Good question.
If you're down the magistrate's court and they ask you, it's not really a situation, a scenario that we need to plan for that realistically, but let's just imagine.
So what I always have.
The gallows are calling.
So well, you know what? I feel that when you see people's death row meals and you see pictures of them, because I remember there was like a Tumblr or something of things different people had, and there was like a lot of like KFC chicken.
Fried chicken seems to be the number one choice for
pizzas,
death row inmates. Yeah,
steak. Mm-hmm. Lobsters, things like that. Things that, by the way, sorry, I've got a bit of a cold.
But you're sounding better than you were this morning, so that's good. We were worried that recording couldn't happen because you sounded like a monster this morning.
But no, I'm better. I sound a lot better. Anyway, I would choose something that maybe I've never tried before. Something exotic.
Oh, what if you hate it?
I don't know. That's part of the game. That's part of the risk. And at this point, I'm not going to have to taste it for very long.
And if it's something that really disagrees with you,
it's not going to matter.
It's not a problem, is it?
Oh, I know. Oh, I've got it. That fish that kills you.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah. Throw caution to the wind. I'd say a fugu.
Fugu yourself up as your last meal. Does it really work like that? Will they really get you anything? Haven't jailers got better things to do? Why do they have to?
Because it's like,
if they have to respect your wishes, don't they have to respect the wish of not giving you a lethal injection?
Well, no, because that's the trade-off, isn't
it? Surely when you commit particularly heinous crimes, the contract with the state is broken and therefore you're not entitled to things your freedom your own breath.
But the death sentence is quite harsh. It's maybe the harshest one. It's like the top level. It's like 6 stars on Grand Theft Auto.
I'm not very good at Grand Theft Auto, and I've found that 1 star is very often a death sentence for me.
So, yeah, you've got to this level, and they've caught you, and it's like death row. I would say, well, if you're going to have to do this to me because of crimes, then I would like the fugu. The death fish.
Get me the fugu.
Yeah, and some chips.
Fugu and chips.
Yeah.
You want to know that there's something that you like in there, because fugu might
first.
Not be nice.
And I eat things segmented. I don't tend to eat like all at once. I have the chips. So I'll have the chips first and think, so I did get something good. So I'm winning both ways. Now I'm going to tuck into the fugu, and I want it done by a rubbish chef. Because then, it'll be even better, because then if it does kill me, I'll have cost everyone loads of money. And that'll be like my final...
Yeah, on top of all the murdering you got to do to get here in the first place.
I cost everyone loads of money and time. What about you?
Probably some sort of vegetarian pasta.
Oh, God. Gnocchi.
Maybe gnocchi. Who knows?
That's why you're not going to get the death sentence.
I'd like to think it's because of my good life.
Okay.
And my lack of political dissidence.
Sometimes I worry, like, what if I go to prison?
But now we've found the silver lining. You can get to try fugu.
Yeah. That's what I'll do.
There's some foreshadowing. It's definitely not intentional foreshadowing, because it's foreshadowing of something that doesn't occur for about 3.5 more series. But for no reason that really makes any sense, Ron sings Two Little Boys.
Yeah, that old Rolf number.
Yeah.
And as we know, Rolf does make an appearance.
But... so it's a long way in the future, but Rolf Harris is, it would appear, a recurrent theme.
Mm.
Oh, we didn't do any housekeeping at the opening of the episode.
I feel like that's when I should have said I've got a cold.
Oh, we've covered that, and people can tell. But they're safe, though. Germs can't be transmitted in that way. I, on the other hand...
I'm in the transmittable germs.
No.
Turn it off.
No. I haven't got some radical new disease that spreads via the internet, although it's a matter of time until such thing is developed. I'm at risk of your germs, is what I meant.
I care more about the listeners.
And I just care about myself.
Yeah.
Gary Sparrow rubbing off on me.
See how I twisted that?
He did. Never fear, Ron is here. Ron's words, not mine. Personally, I'm not sure what Ron is going to bring by way of assistance in this pre-trial preparation.
Just to build him up, build up his spirits. He was also...
didn't even bring a cornetto with him.
No. Unfortunate. But what he did do was, when Gary was pacing the room practicing what he'd do in court, because obviously we also learned that Gary's decided to defend himself.
Yes. Yeah, it speaks to the heart of what Gary's all about, really. No legal experience.
No, doesn't need it.
Works as a TV repairman.
Yeah.
But feels as though he's probably qualified to just represent himself. And doing so without any sort of plan either.
And that's how good he is, though. That's how good he can just make up the plan in the morning. Worry about his suit. We've got to do the planning for the court case. I'll do it before we go. 20 minutes. That's all I need. 20 minutes. Sort my tie out. Turn up. Wow the jury.
With
home in
pacing.
Time for tea. Yeah. A few beers.
Ron is very upbeat about the whole thing. He thinks he's going to get off.
Yeah.
To the point of making a bet with Yvonne, who does not think he's going to get off.
No.
Yvonne is quite certain he's going to get found guilty because he's guilty.
Well, Yvonne actually thinks ahead that he's not just going to lose his licence, he's going to lose his job, and then he's going to be buggered because he can't... His job is driving, so there's no way he could keep his job without having the ability to drive. So there's a very foolish bet on Ron's part.
Yeah, I don't know why I was thinking. Well, he realised that himself because it was originally £20 and he talked the bet down to £5 himself because he realised he wasn't onto a winner here. And indeed he wasn't, because we cut straight to the magistrate's court and there's an establishing shot of about 8 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't time it, but it felt like about 8 minutes of establishing shot outside of the magistrate's court.
I thought this was very useful. This very long establishing shot, because I got to see, I seen some policemen coming out of the building and they shook hands or something and then went off. So they're working, busy, justice is being done, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then
there was that chap turned up with a fugu under his arm.
Yeah.
Just going in, he's obviously about to prepare
the fugu. I don't know why more people don't do that. I feel like it's the master plan. And everybody will remember me as a criminal genius. Died as he lived.
Eating exotic fish.
But there were these two other people just hanging around outside the magistrates.
Very 90s.
Very 90s, because it was a lady in denim hot pants and they were both smoking fags, and there was this guy who had his shades on and a sweater wrapped around his waist and he was smoking as well and he had cool slick back hair, and I just knew he was a yob.
That's what he was.
That's why they were hanging around the magistrates. Because I used to see that in Corby a lot. People hanging around the magistrates.
There's a certain type of person. I can say, hand on heart, I have never hung around the magistrates' court.
Have you not?
No. Oh, you. Is that
just in passing.
Just in passing.
Yeah.
You just get lured in by the romance of the situation.
It's quite interesting to see, because they've all got their own stories. I don't stop and chat to them.
How do you know their stories?
They just make it.
Are they just shouting them at you?
Some of them are shouting. But no, because when I was used to go past, you just see them and think, oh, I wonder what they've done. Like, maybe they robbed some meat. That happens a lot.
Mm.
They do rob a lot of meat.
They, yobs.
Yeah.
Yobs rob meat.
Yeah, do you not know this? This is a thing, isn't it?
Yes, meat theft is a thing.
Why is that a thing?
Because people like meat and it's not cheap.
Fair enough. Justifiable. Okay. I've just always wondered that. When you see what people go to the magistrates for, there's a lot of meat theft. I don't know why.
The thing that I've never understood, and that is the most stolen item.
Razor blades.
What? I mean, yeah, they're expensive, and we're speaking here as two bearded men, I've never stolen razor blades. Have you ever stolen razor blades?
No.
It's never occurred to me too. And it seems like there's a disconnect from the people who would desperately need a shave and the people who would be inclined to go robbing.
Yeah.
But apparently not, no. Razor blades, that's what people...
It's just part of the look, the crime look, the tracksuits, clean shavenness, the caps.
There's a danger of there being some prejudices coming to the fore here.
No, it's not. Is it? What describe a criminal? And don't just say strappy jumper and big bag.
I was definitely going to say strappy jumper. That's all I've got. Pair of tights over the head.
Okay, I'm going to back away from this corner of criminals.
No. What do criminals look like? They're wearing a suit and tie and they work in the city. That's the real criminal.
Yeah.
So there's an 8 minute, and it's not an exaggeration to say 8 minutes, probably longer. Probably two thirds of this episode.
Well, they probably had to pay.
Just this establishing shot outside the magistrate's court. All the time accompanied by a very slow and doleful drumbeat, like something terrible is about to happen. It is.
The magistrate's court is full of a lot of sad stories. It's not going to be like Mambo Number 5, is it?
Your go-to jaunty song.
Yeah, Mambo Number 5.
It wasn't like Mambo Number 5. And we don't get to see inside the magistrate's court, but we do get to see Ron admit defeat and hand over his £5 note.
And that's all we needed to know. There didn't even know words. And obviously there wouldn't be many anyway, because Gary was shell-shocked. He had that 1,000-yard stagger on.
Mm-hmm.
And Yvonne was so furious, she probably couldn't find the words.
They let him go.
Yeah, well, I don't think he would go to prison for that.
I don't know what the consequences would be.
Because he was caught...
with the keys. So it's drunk in charge rather than drunk driving. Yeah. Prison would seem a little harsh.
Yeah, that would be it. Because I imagine a lot of policemen get called out to pubs by people working in pubs because there's a drunk person who has a car and they look like they're going to get in it. So the police might turn up as that happens.
Is this where I get to tell my I had a fight with an old lady story?
Okay.
Yay! A couple of years ago, I was running a pub quiz at a local public house.
I went to that.
Of some salubriousness. And there was a woman of a certain age.
Old.
Yeah, the certain Zephyr Age was old. Yeah. She was old, and she'd been drinking for some time before we arrived, and she was clearly three sheets to the wind, I think is the expression what people use. She'd got her daughter with her, and she was adamant that her daughter wasn't to drive home because she'd had a drink, which was the correct response from the mother. Well, the incorrect response of the mother was, "I'll drive us home."
Oh.
In defence of the daughter, who, as far as I could tell, had no intention of driving home anyway because they only lived around the corner,
Yeah. She
tried to persuade her mother that was not a good idea. And we were watching all of this unfold because it was in the car park. We were watching this woman maintain that she was going to drive, and so I had to step in.
Oh, no.
Because I am a
sheriff
citizen. Yeah.
This is a citizen's arrest.
Pretty much. I said, "You can't drive home. If you try and drive home, I'll have no choice but to call the police." And then she got a little shirt. Dirty, shall we say.
She pulled out her knife.
She wasn't some big, scary old woman. She was a little old woman.
They're the worst ones.
She was little.
Yeah. Fast.
Hammered. She was hammered, but didn't stop her from squaring up to me.
Okay.
Like, proper squaring up and prodding me in the shoulder. What do you do with that?
Well, what was she saying to you?
Just that it was none of my business and that I should back off and just mind my own business and just keep out of it. And she was telling me this by prodding me in the shoulder. Very aggressively, obviously, right up in my grill.
Yeah, oh God.
This is the kind of phrase that I use. Mm. But what do you do with that? This is a little old woman who I could possibly beat in a fight. I don't know. I don't say that about many people.
Especially old people.
Well, just people in general, because generally I couldn't beat them in a fight. Okay. She was swearing a lot as well.
Oh, no.
It won't surprise you to learn.
Dear.
I know. And in the end, the landlady came out, who herself was not a big woman, and had to get between the two of us. Not because I was likely to do anything, because obviously I wasn't. But what do you do? How do you respond? What should I have done differently? In the meantime, somebody else called the police about the fact that she was
the fight outside the pub.
But she gave up. She gave up and went on her way and just walked off, and then the police arrived after she'd left.
So justice wasn't done.
Mm. And I didn't really get in a fight. I didn't actually throw any punches.
No.
I kicked her.
That's fine. That's reasonable.
Yeah.
I didn't know you lived such a life of
Nobody got arrested, so I didn't get to get the answer of what happens if you're drunk in charge of a vehicle without actually driving anywhere.
No.
She was on private property because it was a pub car park, so that might have been different from Gary's situation. So even if the police had turned up, she might not have technically done anything wrong at that stage. I don't know. But Gary's free to go.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably got a driving ban.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's got to have happened, hasn't it?
Yeah.
They never explicitly say that, but I'm pretty sure that Gary can't drive anymore.
No.
Back to the house.
Kitchen.
Back to the kitchen.
Drinks.
Neat whiskey. Yeah. Don't mind if I do.
We know neat whiskey.
Don't mind if I do.
Have a look. Well, no, we did. We had some at the weekend. Didn't like it.
Oh, we did, didn't we? I forgot about this.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about whiskey a few episodes ago, and somebody got in touch on Twitter saying, "Whiskey's lovely, actually. You're supposed to drink it neat. It's really nice." Mm. So we were at a party the other week, and Chris specifically bought some expensive whiskey.
Some expensive whiskey that I found. Not in a bush.
No.
I found in a retailer, and I brought it along and thought, right, because this person said this, we'll get a review. We'll review it ourselves and have some neat whiskey over the course of the evening and see how we get on. First off, didn't like it. Didn't like it at all.
No, me neither.
It was
burned.
Nice.
It burned.
It burned, and the other effect of it was I was drunk.
You were shit-faced.
So...
But you'd left your car at home, so no crimes were committed.
No crimes were committed, no. Which is always good.
My girlfriend took to it quite well. I had, the tiniest little whiskey and thought, no, I've just reconfirmed what I already knew. Mm. Neat whiskey is an unpleasant thing to do to oneself.
Yeah. I had a little bit more, just to confirm my suspicions.
Uh-huh.
And that's what the results were. It'll get you drunk, and it doesn't taste very nice. So maybe that is why sad people drink it.
Mm. But don't pretend. Don't pretend you're doing it for some other reason.
Yeah.
My life is an utter shambles and a total botch.
Yep.
No, not me.
Oh, okay.
Not me. Oh. Gary Sparrow. Oh. This is how Gary is feeling about himself.
Oh, I thought he was talking about the whiskey. You just wanted to get something off your chest.
Is this a good idea, I ask myself? Shouldn't we remember the salutary lesson so recently dispensed and indulge in a libation free from those properties that have brought about our downfall?
You can indulge in what you like, Ron. Me, I'm going to get rat-arsed. My life is an utter shambles and total botch.
don't really know what that means. My life is a botch.
A botch. What's a botch? Look
it's
up
like
what
when
a botch
you,
is.
It's like when you half-ass a job, you botch it, don't you?
His life's a botch. It's a mess. It's half of it's done.
What's the dictionary definition of botch? Botch. So we're using the noun here, and the noun is a bungled task.
Okay. Bungled. That sound, and botch sounds harsher than bungled. My life is a shambles and a bungle. Sounds like an episode of Rainbow.
Botch is also an American metalcore band formed in 1993 in Tacoma, Washington. Ron points out that he's doing Being Drunk wrong.
Yeah, he is.
And that he's gone straight to the self-pity bit, and that should come later. Is Ron a good friend?
Yeah, he is. Misguided, but a good friend, I would say.
And the phone rings.
Yes.
And as foretold by Yvonne, Gary is out of a job. Both Gary and Yvonne, we've established, are not good on the telephone.
No, they're terrible.
They're not good on the phone. It's not their medium. This conversation's no different. He tries to be reticent. He tries to be apologetic, and he tries to be grovelling even. By his own admission, he's trying to grovel. But he's shit at it.
His boss wasn't having any of it, which, to be fair, his boss wouldn't, because his job is driving. Specifically driving the van.
So the boss's decision is probably already made, but if you're trying to present yourself in the best light and come across as somebody who is in some way deserving of keeping their job, maybe be nicer.
Yeah.
Maybe don't give the boss the feeling that I'm well rid of this person. And there was a feeling of entitlement. I've been there for 10 years. Well, yeah, but you've also just been found guilty of drink driving. So let's...
That means that could have been, from their eyes, that could have been 10 years of you being pissed.
Absolutely. 10 years of you endangering the good name of Rumbelows.
That's why Rumbelows went out of business.
Quite possibly, as a direct consequence of the scandal that erupted out the back of their drunken legion of drivers.
There you go.
Possible. There was Greg Rumbelow on the other end of the phone. Mm. You know, trying his best to talk Gary round, and then Gary just calls him a fat pig.
Yeah, and hangs up.
That's not okay. You're going to need a reference off this person, if nothing else.
So the job's done. There's absolutely no chance of us seeing Rumbelows again.
Ron sees this as an opportunity, and that he should take a holiday to 1940, and it's the 1940s, and everything will be better there. He's quite jealous, isn't he, Ron?
Oh, yeah.
He wants a bit of this for himself.
Well, he's already tried to get there, and it went wrong, and he's living through Gary in some ways.
Yes, he sees this as a fantasy, which it is.
Mm.
Who wouldn't, given the opportunity? If I was to say to you, there's a tunnel here, you can walk through and end up in 1941, obviously you'd do it. Even if there wasn't the promise of a Phoebe on the other end. You'd have a look, wouldn't you?
I'd have to look for Phoebe. I'm always having a look for Phoebe.
Yeah, yes, but even without Phoebe. I'm taking Phoebe out of the equation.
Okay, just the time tunnel.
Just the time tunnel. You can go back and you can see what it smelt like in 1940.
Hmm, fishy.
You think fishy?
Yeah.
Fishy.
Not suspicious fishy, just like selling fish.
I feel like the 1940s would smell quite a lot of boiled cabbage. I feel like there'd be that soupier smell.
Yeah.
Overcooked vegetables.
Yeah, that's it. Old people's houses.
But everywhere.
You know, so it's not really a place you'd want to go on holiday.
Not on holiday, but you'd have a look. Oh, here comes Yvonne and she's fuming.
Yep.
She's not got over this yet.
And, well, the first time she comes into the kitchen and sees him drinking again. This situation's happened and now we're back here again.
And so she does the only thing appropriate and throws the whiskey away. I mean, she could have just added some Coke. That would have made it palatable as well. She could have just put some Diet Coke in there. That would have been nice. But she throws the whiskey away. And then she takes Ron's whiskey and pours it in Gary's lap. Yeah, fair enough.
And storms out. I'm with her on this. I'd be furious at him.
He's done a bad thing. And he's not very sorry about it. He's not taking any sort of personal responsibility or admitting that, yes, your life might be an utter shambles and total botch, Gary Sparrow, but nobody made you do those things.
No.
You made those choices and you need to grab them by the... What might you grab a thing by?
The ghoulies.
By the ghoulies. Grab your choices by the ghoulies.
Grab them.
That's some big ghoulies you just mind grabbing there.
Grab them ghoulies. And this is Gary's problem throughout this whole series, though. He does make all these bad decisions, but he doesn't get to the point where he feels regret. It's pity he wants. He craves the pity. Doesn't get the regret bit. Mm-hmm. That never really comes.
I honestly thought, 9 episodes in as we are now, I thought that I was past being shocked by any of the soft furnishings in Gary and Yvonne's house.
Because we've seen everything now, surely.
I thought that was it. I am acclimatised to their tastes, or lack of. I understand that the design choices they've made for their house are not ones that I would take, or that any sensible human being would make. And then they just throw me a curveball that I'm just not expecting. And this week, that took the form of their duvet cover.
Oh, my.
For my notes, I've put Aztec quilt cover.
Yeah, I was thinking Aztec.
But not, you know, like real Aztec.
No.
Like an 80s twist on the Aztec.
Yeah, which is a good theme.
Bright reds and browns and yellows.
Triangles.
And triangles and squares and... Oh, mama.
It's not very sort of sleep-inducing.
No. It's terror nightmare-inducing, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Nothing relaxing about that duvet cover. Somebody's job was to design that duvet cover. And they wouldn't have just made one of them, because that's not how duvet covers work. So there would have been multiples of that duvet cover.
I feel like a lot of people probably had them.
In the UK, yeah. In the mid-90s, that duvet cover, there'd have been a fair few of them out there.
I'm sure I've seen some.
Of that particular...
Of that particular... Maybe in different colours, but I know, in fact, I know for a fact in the 90s they existed. And it was fine. Nobody said anything about it. Now, the only time you see them is when you're doing this and watching things from the past. Or if you're watching a drama about, like, a heroin addict.
You're going to have to keep going, because I don't really understand where you got what you're talking about.
Because, like, you know, in like, The Wire and stuff?
Yes.
And when you see people, like, all zonked out on the heroin...
Zonked out on heroin, yep, that's the phrase they use.
All their stuff's about
mm-hmm.
needles, spoons, wires.
That's not why it's called The Wire.
So, yeah.
Needles and spoons everywhere.
Yeah, and they've all got, like, vest tops on and ripped pants.
See, this seems quite specific to Baltimore rather than to anything you'd have seen in the real world.
No, this also is like Dundee.
Okay. I don't know what you're confessing here, but carry on.
Yeah, imagine it in your head. I think I'm painting a picture.
You are.
So there's all that about. You've got shoes with holes in and a dirty sofa with holes in it. And the only thing you've got for warmth is not a duvet, like a proper fully formed duvet, just a duvet cover. And they're using it just like to cling on to. So that remember your past life before all this shit happened in the drugs.
Oh, so you're harking back to a nicer time, or...
I'm not, they are.
They well, yeah, sorry.
That's the only context you would see that duvet cover in now, used as some sort of...
emotional prop for a for a crack addict.
Specifically, yes. I think that's right.
I can't think of any other use for that duvet, so I'm going to give you that.
I'm on quite a dark journey there.
It's interesting why the people of Dundee in particular have taken your ire.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sorry if you're listening to this from Dundee. Please do talk up in defence of your lovely titty.
Or send in pictures of your duvet covers.
To either prove us wrong or right.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that would be really depressing if we got some pictures of This Is My Life from somebody in Dundee and it's their half-eaten sofa. Oh, I feel a bit sad.
I don't think they'll be listening to podcasts.
Probably not.
They've spent all their money on the crack.
And spoons.
And the crack and the spoons. Do you have a lot of spoons?
It's the spoon budget. The spoon budget of an addict. It's never really... Do they give those out in clinics as well? It's obviously, you have the needle exchanges. Do you get given a new spoon as well?
Well, they always look quite used.
I guess. I don't think...
Maybe they have. Maybe they just have one. That's like their lucky one. Yeah, like in Inception when they've got totems. Heroin addicts might have, like, spoons. And they know the weight of it. That's my one. That's my spoon. Just to get the right amount of heroin.
Is it like in Harry Potter and the Wands, where every heroin addict has to select their spoon?
Yeah.
Or the spoon selects them?
I don't know. I've never been on the journey.
Are we making light of a truly horrible thing here?
Yeah.
I meant the quilt cover. Not substance abuse. So they're in bed, huddled underneath the world's most awful quilt cover. Gary's looking through the job pages. Proactive.
Yeah, he's found one.
He has.
£250,000.
Uh-huh.
He'll get a really nice car and a new house. It'll be a start of a new life. Being a rep. That's it.
That plan sounds perfect.
Yeah. He's got travel.
Not really thought that through, have you, Gary? You've not defined your brief adequately, Gary Sparrow.
So everyone does say that's not... That's not really for you, considering your circumstances. So he says... Well, he's wrong here as well, because he says about being a trolley attendant. And they drive those little trucks.
Didn't you want to be a trolley
attendant? No, that was my sister.
Oh, your sister wanted to... When she grew up, she wanted to be a trolley attendant.
Yeah. Don't know why. She just took a shine to it.
Never got to realise that dream.
No, she's a bit of a letdown, my sister.
Well, that's the problem, is if you set your sights that high, you're only going to get disappointments.
Yeah. And she can't drive, so she's in the same boat as Gary. She'll just get disappointed when she goes for the interview.
the conversation moves on to maybe they should split up. Maybe.
This is the opportunity now. There's no subtext here. She's saying, I think maybe we need to look at whether or not it's worth us carrying on down this road of kidneys and Aztec quilts. And if I was Gary, I'd say, well, yeah, this is perfect. This is my opportunity to get out.
This is the window of opportunity that he's been waiting for. But he doesn't want to take it. I thought this was quite a nicely put together little conversation that they had, because it would have been a bit of a cop-out if he'd have just turned round and said, no, I love you, I want us to be together, this is, you're all I want, you're so important to me. That would, you know, that answer would have done the job, but it wouldn't have told as much story as we got, which was both of them seriously thinking about, actually, maybe this is it. Yvonne says something along the lines of how he's got his head in the sand and is ignoring all of their problems. And Gary says something quite prescient in that he says he likes having his head in the sand.
Yeah, he likes it there. Safe.
Warm. Sandy.
Yeah. Sounds quite uncomfortable having your head in the sand.
It doesn't sound comfortable at all. I don't think I'd like that one bit. But Gary does.
He's
used to a life of discomfort. Has to sleep under that duvet cover.
Mm.
So it's got him well trained for whatever life might throw at him.
Maybe that was the point.
If he can sleep through that, then nothing is beyond his achievement. Then we need to move the plot forward. So Yvonne starts talking about maybe counselling's the way to go. Oh, a shake of the head there. Counselling is not the way to go. Is that a personal feeling?
No. I was thinking of how Gary felt.
Ah, right. You were just channeling.
I was channeling him. I've got no problem with counselling.
You've got no problem with counselling. No, I thought that there was some sort of comment on the psychologist culture that the world we live in, that like people should just put their stiff lip forward.
Yeah, or I saw one time when they tried to break me, but I broke them. One of those sort of stories.
I can believe that. Gary's not keen on the idea, you can see, but he's very much about, well, we'll see what happens and we'll try, and it ends up quite positive. But something happened overnight, because first thing in the morning, Yvonne wakes up and Gary has gone. No buy or leave, he's just off. And he said a thing about, actually, no, I'm going to take Ron's advice and just disappear to the 1940s on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So cut to the pub.
Oh, he annoys me in this scene. From the second it starts, the way he strolls in, puts his hat on the bar, banging on the table, saying, Gary's here. It's like where they're all supposed to come running. And they do.
Bear in mind, when he left, he was still not on very good talking terms with Phoebe. We were kind of glossing over that.
That's true.
It must be there must have been a few weeks past, because you don't just go to court the day after you've been arrested, do you? I don't know. You hang around at magistrates' courts more often than I do.
I think it depends on the crime. That one could probably wait.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how magistrates' court works. You know, any miscreants listening to the podcast who've got more experience of being on the wrong side of the law than we have, or magistrates, if you've got any magistrates listening,
the Supreme Court.
Do you think we've got any high court judges listening to this podcast?
I don't know. They like telly.
Me.
They have to watch something.
Being a judge must be really boring. But those big wigs that they wear. They could probably hide a pair of earphones quite nicely, couldn't
they?
They
must listen to all the podcasts.
And they could be listening to the podcast right now while they're supposed to be making notes.
Exactly.
Because, let's be honest, in 95% of cases, they're going to have made up their mind within 5 minutes of the court.
And all this stuff they know about. For some reason, I think that there's no real big surprises in these things.
No.
It doesn't happen like you see in films where someone storms in and says, or the person that was killed storms in. Except if it's a soap. Even if that did happen and the dead person came walking in, the judge wouldn't be like all shocked. There would just be fuck's sake.
A paperwork.
We're going to have to sort this out now.
So hello to any judges listening. Yeah. Do the judges wear the wigs? Is that the barristers? You see, look how clean a life I've led that I've never set foot inside a court in my life.
I am under the impression it depends how high up you are. How big
your wig gets.
Yeah, because I've seen someone, they're pretty big.
But is that the judges or is that the
That's judges. The magistrates wear ones that are a bit more, whoo.
So there's no booze in the pub. Gary's got
the shakes.
Gary's got the shakes. Gary needs a drink. And there's no booze in the pub. We don't cover the issue of how he's now making his way to the East End. We've already established that Cricklewood is a long way.
He'd have to have left really early.
So he'd have had to have left early, unless he's carrying on driving. Wouldn't put it past him.
No, never would I, actually. And I feel like in the 90s that was a big thing.
Because let's face it, I've never been pulled over in a car.
No, well, I haven't been driving for very long, so I've still got time.
Yeah, I've been driving for 10 years. I could have not had a driving licence for all of that because I've never been pulled over once.
So you could have had as many bodies as you want in your boot.
Get away with it. So maybe that's just what he's doing. Rumbelows would have wanted their van back if was going to do this. It's going to be one of his last chances because Rumbelows aren't going to let him keep the van, are they?
No, they didn't need that back.
They need that for the liquidators. Gary doesn't seem to know the ingredients of shandy. Did you notice this?
Yeah.
Having established that a bar has no beer...
Yeah.
You can't then ask for a shandy because they can't make you a shandy, Gary.
No. The lemonade, maybe.
I mean, some cocktails, they're complicated and it's understandable that you might not know what goes into making them. But shandy...
I can make that one.
If he'd asked for a shandy first and then they said no to the shandy, he could then ask for a beer because it may be that they were just out of lemonade.
Exactly. But Reg has got some cherry brandy.
Half a bottle of cherry brandy is kept under the bar.
I'd be quite happy with that.
Sounds nicer than neat whiskey.
Yeah, I'd do that. And because it's that sort of spirit, you wouldn't have too much of it in a glass, you could still pull off that sort of cool look that you were going for.
Gary being Gary, which is how I feel that we have to start a lot of sentences on the Goodnight Sweetcast.
Yeah.
Gary being Gary has very little awareness of what he's asking for when he asks PC Deadman. Or he's just Reg at the moment, isn't he?
He
seems to have hung up his hat for a while, and he's just Reggie at the minute. And Phoebe turns up, and Gary, being Gary, doesn't realise that him asking for them to cheer him up might not be a particularly appropriate thing to ask for.
No.
That maybe, just maybe, this family living in the middle of the East End during the Blitz might have things slightly worse than he does.
It's a bit like turning up to a funeral and saying, me saying about how my Wi-Fi's bad. That's the same sort of level.
Yeah, you're getting buried, but you're going to have exactly the same number of bars as me.
People would hate that.
So Phoebe, who's fresh from queuing for 4 hours for a little parcel of meat, we don't know what type it was. We know what it isn't. Process of elimination, she has told us it is not lamb's tails.
Lamb's tails. When she said this, I was a bit confused by this. Because lambs only have little tails, don't they? And the little, like, furry things.
Ah.
Oh,
I know the answer to this.
Oh, they don't get them cut off or something, right?
Lambs have their tails cut off. Sheep naturally have quite long tails,
why
but
they
have them
that?
Cut. Because they get covered in shit and they turn really disgusting because we've engineered sheep to have way more wool than they're supposed to and that it all just draggles off of them. Their tail in particular gets really draggledy and horrible. Oh. So they just cut them off because I remember learning at quite a young age how they do this.
It's gross, isn't it?
Not particularly gross. It's not as bad as just snipping it off. They kind of put a really tight elastic band around
it. Oh, yeah.
And it kind of shrivels and dies and just falls off.
Yeah.
Is my understanding. Not a shepherd, not entirely sure that I'm accurate in what I'm saying here, but left to their own devices, lambs do have tails, but you can imagine they're not particularly
meaty. I thought they were like meatballs. I thought it was like, oh, she's going to have meatballs for dinner. Furry meatballs.
Furry, to imagine that they'd left the wool on.
Yeah, the way she was describing them, I just thought she had a bag full of furry meatballs, like pom-poms.
Yeah, so she's been queuing for 4 hours for a parcel of meat. Generally speaking, they're all a bit miserable. But Gary knows a way to put a smile back on her face. You didn't like this.
Yeah, I really didn't like this at all. Because he went very much exactly what Ron told him to do. Go on holiday, give Phoebe some stockings. He didn't improvise, didn't think for himself. Just went, all right, note one, go there, buy stockings, turn up. No thinking involved. And after we've already established that Phoebe has sort of realised that Gary, you can't expect me to be cheering you up. I immediately feel sorry for you. And she was really quite good about it. Forward. I liked it. She was exactly right. It's not her job to cheer him up. And he goes, well, I've got a surprise. Whips out the coat, pulls out a present for her. And she changes immediately. She's completely won over by the gift. Her face lifts and she forgets everything she said 4 seconds ago. And that just really pissed me off.
Especially given her moment of clarity in last week's episode where she cottoned on to this trick that he was playing threw it back in his face to then completely change.
It's a complete U-turn.
Over a pair of stockings.
Which puts that pheromone theory back up again.
Mm.
Just by being around him long enough, that sort of stuff starts to just...
Yeah, the rational side of your brain just stops working.
You just accept stockings off anyone.
Gary Gass.
Yeah, okay.
They're not even stockings.
No, they're not.
What's she supposed to do with these things?
Cut your onions in them.
So, yeah, she doesn't know what to do with a pair of tights because she's never seen such a thing before.
Mm.
The audience loved that. They lapped that up.
I don't know, actually, why they find that so funny.
Maybe just the sight of a gusset, because she's got her hand right in the gusset. That in itself is quite a funny thing. Something strange happens next to end off this scene. She again points out that it's not her job to cheer up Gary,
mm-hmm.
and that he should be aware that other people have got it worse than she has. I can't remember this having happened in all the episodes we've watched so far.
Okay.
Gary apologises.
Mm.
He said, "I'm sorry."
Yeah.
He said it in a rather sincere way. He said it in a way that made me really taken aback, because we haven't seen that yet.
No.
This episode is the first we've talked about that wasn't written by Marks and Gran. We've got a different writer this week, and somebody didn't get the memo that Gary doesn't apologise.
The golden rule.
The golden rule. The writer of this episode was Paul Makin. With the exception of an out-of-character apology from Gary, I didn't feel like the writing felt that far removed from what we've seen. I mean, we know that Gran and Marks were still on the scene and undoubtedly would have had a lot of involvement still.
Yeah, and sitcoms, by their nature, are very formulaic.
Yes, so we got Ron's voice was very similar. The relationship between Yvonne and Gary certainly felt consistent with what we'd seen so far, for all of its ridiculousness. So the writing was still on point. Just that little apology shouldn't have been in there. It's not how he works.
No.
But it is how we end the scene before going back to 1995 and a conversation with Ron at the print shop.
Oh, because we haven't said, have we? Ron has offered him a fake job.
Ron is going to be his alibi so that he can spend as much time away in 1941 as he likes, because Ron is going to say that he works for him now.
How is that going to work, though, in regards to getting paid?
No, he's not going to get paid.
So he's not going to get paid?
No, it's not a very well-conceived plan.
No.
Gary has decided he is going to be strong-minded and resolute, and this is the beginning of a new era for him.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron asks him, "So therefore, have you made a decision, Yvonne or Phoebe?"
No,
haven't really.
The only one he's really got to make.
Not really thought about it. Leave me alone. That's all that scene was for. He wanders back to his house. And remember, he just disappeared earlier that morning. But yeah, he wandered back. He's got his red shirt tucked into his jeans.
Nice
touch. Jenny from college is in the lounge with Yvonne for a
catch-up.
Ostensibly a catch-up, but actually some stealth counselling.
Mm. Which I'm not okay with.
I feel as though if counselling is going to work, it should be consensual.
I think so.
Well, yeah. I suppose intervention. We're describing an intervention, aren't we?
Yeah, but you know you get an intervention.
Because they say this is an intervention, yeah, is the opening gambit. Yeah, so maybe unexpected, but still honest.
Yeah, this is more like what Jedis do.
Some kind of counselling mind control.
Mind trick. You're giving away all your personal feelings by a wizard.
Do you think Jenny was a wizard?
Well, that's how she's playing a trick.
I'm not sure it's Jenny's fault. I think that Yvonne is culpable here. She's the one that's initiated this, isn't she?
Yeah, she's
Jenny along.
She summoned her.
Summoned the wizard.
Yeah, that's how I see it.
With some sort of incantation. I mean, it works.
It did
Gary,
work away,
Gary
yeah.
opens up straight away. Starts talking about all of his insecurities and all of the problems that he has and how he doesn't really fit in with the world, which are all things that we've explored and we know about Gary, and it's nice to know that he does understand about himself because, as we've said before, Gary's no idiot.
No.
And he's not naive, and he does understand some of his weaknesses. Doesn't tend to learn from them particularly, but he does understand them.
He knows they're there, but his head is in the sand.
And he loves it there. Despite the fact that this counselling has been thrust upon him without his knowledge, yeah, and Gary is opening up quite nicely and talking about his feelings, he gets wise to the fact of what's going on and he doesn't like it. And he storms off to the kitchen. Yvonne goes after him and Yvonne has a bit of a cry.
Yeah, proper cry. She gets very... Cry? Proper cry. She gets really upset. Like, properly upset.
He's not good at dealing with that. Not good at all at dealing with an upset Yvonne. But she talks him round into continuing just giving the counselling a try. Gary regresses to a mumbling teenager.
Well, I thought it was more he was trying to game the system. He was trying to do that thing where he was trying to get into her head.
I'm going to do the minimum possible.
Yeah.
I'm going to be as unhelpful as I can, despite
analyze
the fact
this
is obviously important to you and upset you, and you're trying to do something proactive to help our relationship. I am going to just dig my heels in and just mumble and not be helpful at all. Fortunately for him, what transpires is a weird argument between Yvonne and the counsellor, Jenny.
About her former boyfriend?
Yes.
I feel like there was a bit of tension between them anyway. In fact, I don't think Yvonne was friends with this woman.
It didn't seem to be. Jenny just wanted to bring up Trevor Harrison. Trevor Harrison, the boyfriend from college. The train spotter boyfriend from college with the sensible shoes.
Hmm.
He perks up at this point because he wants to know more about Trevor Harrison.
The tables have turned.
And now he's in charge.
Yeah, he likes that.
And Yvonne's made to feel uncomfortable.
And Yvonne doesn't see this because she immediately does what Gary does. Which is sort of why they are good in a way, because they're similar. Mm. They do have the same faults.
The counselling session ultimately breaks down, not because of Gary's mumbling unwillingness to participate, but because they end up having a full-on fight.
I haven't really thought about this before. This is a new one.
A new thought?
New thought has happened.
Do we need a jingle?
We might do. If the tables were turned and Yvonne was the time traveller,
mm-hmm.
and Gary was the one who didn't know and was getting cheated on, so Yvonne was going back to the 40s and was having a fun old time with an officer.
Or Reg.
Let's go with Reg. And would this exact same thing happen? Do you think she would go down the same route Gary goes down?
I think that she probably would.
I can see her having an affair.
They have got these similar, the ways that they handle the truth and the ways that they communicate with each other. Yeah, I think that she would hide it from him and be a similarly dishonest person and try and get the best of both worlds rather than coming up with a situation that actually resolved something, because she never makes the move and decides that she's going to put her foot down and make something happen. So, they're both complicit here. And I think, if the tables were turned, the same outcome would happen.
And if you look at it the other way around, if it was Phoebe doing the time travel to the 90s, I don't think Phoebe would.
No, I don't think she would. I think Phoebe is the odd man out here.
So if I was Gary and I had this thought now, that I'm having, that would have made my mind up for me.
Mm. That Phoebe is the better person in this scenario, and therefore the person that...
Yeah.
Or would he take that even further and think, well, I should stay with Yvonne then because we're more similar and I shouldn't foist myself on poor Phoebe, who's better than me?
Well, no, it depends, because, again, I'm trying to put myself in Gary's shoes and I'm a different person. I'd already be with Phoebe.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had some sort of reason for wanting to stay with Yvonne desperately, I think early on I would have had this list in my head, this experiment, and would have come to the conclusion via that.
But it would make for a short series.
It would make for a short series, because I'm not an adulterer.
So they're back in bed, back under the horrible duvet cover. The dust has settled. They're talking about their relationship again, and they're deciding to give it another shot.
Ugh.
But they're doing so through a forced and overly long football analogy, which just won't stop. If you were to form a pie chart of this episode, the biggest wedge would be football analogy. Then there'd be a slightly smaller wedge of just waiting for the establishing shot outside the magistrate's court to finish.
Yeah.
And then everything else just like a sliver of remaining pie.
And also, the football analogy in bed thing, I don't know if it's just me. That doesn't get me in the mood.
Well, it did, Gary, because passions were lit.
This is more of a 90s thing than anything else. Whenever a couple go to have sex, the man leaps on her, takes the duvet with him, and they just go whoosh, like he's trying to take her into the night like a little Dark Lord. I don't know why.
The duvet cover is his cape.
Yeah, I don't know why that happens. That would happen to me. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
Maybe. I don't think this should be a forum for us examining your technique. I don't think anybody wants that.
That's how they do, they come around my neck like a cape and pretend I'm a bat.
Yeah.
I am Batman.
But they go for it. Good for them. Because it's been a while. We've established that it's been a while, so that's good. We don't...
remembered what happens.
It's a family-friendly show, so we don't get to see any more than that.
Yeah.
But the following morning, we've got Gary speaking into the mirror. The writer may have got it wrong in that Gary apologised. What he got absolutely right is the next scene. Gary talking to himself in the mirror, congratulating himself on managing it 3.5 times last night.
Yeah.
Don't think too hard about what the half time might mean. Because it's not pleasant. Don't think about it. You're thinking about it. You're pulling that face because you're thinking. Don't think about it. 3.5 times. Then he admits to himself in the mirror, actually, it was only twice.
Yeah.
This man is such a compulsive liar. He cannot be honest to his own reflection
It's a problem, isn't it?
It is a real problem. So they actually only did it twice, which is fine. That's well done. That's, you know, that's a perfectly respectable number, I'd imagine. Yvonne says it's the best sex she's had since Monday.
Hey.
They didn't have sex on Monday, but she's got to pay the bills somehow.
Yeah.
Quite a nice gag.
She's a prostitute.
We weren't quite sure about Joke of the Week, but we did settle on the next line for this week's Joke of the Week.
Marriage is a very complicated machine. When it breaks down, you can't fix it with one screw.
Two?
Fix a screw, as in a machine. It works on levels.
Yeah, sex.
Sex levels. Also, we get to see Gary's insecurity there as he points out that it was actually two.
Yeah, two screws.
Which is nice. They're getting on. They're,
in a way.
In a way, they're getting on. Although acknowledging that problems are still there.
Hmm.
Yvonne leaves the bedroom. Rather than celebrating this closeness that they've found, immediately his thoughts turn to Phoebe. Mm-hmm. And he's straight under the bed and he pulls out his big bumper boy's book of the Blitz. And
as you always do after a night of passion.
So he's done his bit to make Yvonne happy twice.
Twice.
And now he wants to find something from the war that's going to perk up Phoebe's spirits.
But yeah, he doesn't need to do it with his penis. that's what he was doing.
Yes. But
he was replacing his penis with Hitler's invasion of Russia, as you do.
One is a perfectly acceptable substitute for the other.
Yeah.
We finish off the episode back at the pub, and we're seeing a side of the pub we've not seen before. It's shot weird.
Yeah.
So I can work out, were we in the other room of the pub that we don't normally see?
It looks like we're in the other room, because Gary comes from the door and turns right instead of straight ahead. And goes to the bar. So this must be like their function room.
And there was Phoebe doing pub things. She was doing the mopping.
Yeah.
And she's laddered her last pair of stockings. She's going to have to wear them tights now, I guess. Although she'd rather paint her legs with browning. And
is that a thing?
It's not a thing now, but that was a thing during the war, is that women would, because they didn't have any stockings, they'd paint their legs.
Why?
So people thought that they were wearing stockings. I don't know. Cover up their varicose veins. I don't know, but it was a thing.
Barbara, why have you got gravy on your legs? That doesn't feel like a conversation you ever need to have. Or maybe they didn't have it because it all smelled like dinner.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to point it out, would you? That would be embarrassing for everybody concerned.
That's what it smelled like. Gravy.
Yes. That's what the 1940s smelled
Everybody was just walking around with meaty calves.
She's clearly very upset and just feeling overwhelmed by the world. And along comes Gary. And he's acknowledging that, yes, things are worse for the people in war-torn London. And he's right.
Yeah.
She has a little cry. We've seen somebody have a little cry already this episode. And Gary did not handle it well.
No.
But he's much better with Phoebe.
He said the same thing. He called her a champ.
Mm-hmm. But
more tenderly.
More tenderly, did it with a hug and did it in a way that you felt he actually cared.
So it was more, it was rather than, oh, cheer up, champ.
I want you to stop. This wasn't, I want you to stop because it's making me feel uncomfortable.
This was more, oh, champ. A term of endearment, champ, instead of a, you might have lost this round, Rocky.
It wasn't meant to mean pull yourself together, which is what it was with Yvonne. In this case, it was trying to offer genuine sympathy and was tinged with a lot more care about her feelings than we got when he was trying to do the same things with Yvonne, which speaks volumes about the thing we already know. We already know that he likes Phoebe more than he likes Yvonne. He just needs to acknowledge that himself, probably. But he wants to convince Phoebe that things are getting better and has gone to the effort of actually finding something that will lift her spirits. And the thing he's found is that Hitler has invaded Russia and that that's going to be a turning point in the war. He gets his thunder stolen slightly when Reg gets to break the news first.
Yeah, just as he's about to say it, Reg barges in and says it. And Gary is disappointed.
He's not happy about that.
He says in the most childish way, I wanted to say that. That was my thing. You ruined my thing.
But it worked. It lifted Phoebe's spirits and she was feeling better about things. And everything seems to be looking a little bit more upbeat, a little bit more promising. So he's got over the problems that were put in place at the beginning of this episode and the end of last one. And things are looking a bit more positive with both of his love interests.
Still not got a driving license.
No.
But that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because he's cheered up Phoebe and that's his job now.
And he got two screws.
We get one final joke, which was a good one. It was a good one for Nicholas Lyndhurst's reaction. We're talking about this so much now and we've watched so much Goodnight Sweetheart that it's easy to forget how much Nicholas Lyndhurst brings to the role and his reaction to this particular scene and this little setup, which is a great little joke and a little idea. And he really does what could have been completely throwaway. He turns into something really quite special, which is the joke that Reg says, "Oh, Yvonne's here to see you." To which Gary
does his best acting.
Absolutely
good,
brilliant.
Proper comedy acting.
Draws it out. It's great comedy acting. Of course, it's not that Yvonne. It's another Yvonne.
An old lady.
It's an old lady. It's Auntie Yvonne that's come to see Phoebe.
And he goes, "Oh, thank God for that."
It rounds off the episode neatly. Yeah. And there we are. That's the end of episode 3 of series 2 of Goodnight Sweethearts. Thank you very much for listening. We should be back again in 2 weeks' time. Our release schedule is back to being more sensible now, so we will be sticking. We had a bit of a pause between the before last time's episode, but we're back on the 2-weekly schedule now. Every other week when we're not releasing a Goodnight Sweetcast, we will be releasing an episode of Wiki Shuffle. Please do look that up and give that a try with our new rolling third presenter that will be changing all the time because Jack's left us.
Yeah.
Because he's going off around Asia like a crazy person.
Forever. But it's all fine. We've replaced him already.
Yeah, it was easy, actually.
We've got loads.
Loads of people queuing up to come on. And hopefully we'll get some more people on the Sweetcast at some point in the future, too. If you've got any ideas of things that you would like to see on the show, then please let us know. Yeah, we had an email. I can't put my hands on it now. We had a message from somebody saying that they're enjoying the show. Thank you for getting in touch. And I'm sorry that I can't find your name anywhere. But one of the suggestions that they made was that we let people know when we're recording each episode so that listeners might be able to tell us what they thought the episode and we can include their comments in our chat. So we will be doing that from now on. So for every time that we go to record, we will put an announcement up on our Facebook page, Goodnight Sweetcast, and on our Twitter, @GNScast, telling you that we're going to be recording the next episode and giving you a chance, if you've already seen the episode, to let us know your feelings or any particular point that you would like us to talk about or hear our opinions on. We've also had another few emails from people saying that they're enjoying the show. Thank you for that. Particularly, we had an email from Gregor who says that he's very much enjoying the podcast but has never watched a single episode of Goodnight Sweetheart in his life and yet has listened to every episode of our podcast so far. He goes on to say that he does not intend to watch any.
Fair enough.
And that he is using entirely this show to understand what Goodnight Sweetheart is about and that will be his only source.
That's an interesting way to do it.
It is. And more power to your elbow, Gregor. Thank you for getting in touch. We will be back again in 2 weeks' time with episode 4. And in the meantime, feel free to get in touch with us. Send us your submissions to The Gary Lurie.
The Gary Lurie.
And we will be relaunching our Wiki Shuffle website soon. So if you're wondering why you haven't actually got to see The Gary Lurie yet, it's because we're redesigning the website. And once that's all done and made to look pretty, The Gary Lurie and all the submissions we've received to date will be there for you to see and enjoy as much as we have enjoyed them.
Wonderful.
All right, then. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Goodnight Sweetcast is a Wiki Shuffle podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter @GNScast, or find out more at goodnightsweetcast.com.